Good morning. Thank you all for being here today. I was walking around earlier and just kind of seeing all the faces, and many of you I've known for a long time. Seeing everybody in one room together is kind of different, but pretty cool. Good representation today, so thank you for being here. I am going to walk you through the preliminary flash of our 2018 results. We're going to talk about 19 guidance. We're going to talk about the balance sheet, and then we're going to finish on a discussion around financial policy. So if you're not awake yet, now's the time. We'll start with 2018. We are announcing today our preliminary 2018 results. Adjusted EBITDA of $750 million and adjusted free cash flow of $165 million. 2018 was a really strong year. We're really proud of where we ended up. Finished above the midpoint for both of those ranges on adjusted EBITDA and free cash flow. Our earnings call is scheduled for March 21st, which most of you probably know that. We're not going to get into the details today around 18, but wanted to give you just a brief flash of this to kind of help put the 19 guidance discussion in perspective, and also, you know, take away concerns of, okay, well, Investor Day was great, but what are you going to tell me on March 21st? So we can kind of put 18 to bed, but great year. We're really proud of it. One thing I would just note on adjusted EBITDA, given the pension freeze, we have adjusted our EBITDA definition to exclude the pension expense. So there's a $21 million impact there. If you back that out of the 750, which is kind of apples to apples with where we start, we're still above the midpoint of our guidance range, but just wanted to point that out to be transparent there. Moving to 2019, we are announcing today our 2019 guidance. Our adjusted EBITDA guidance range is $575 million to $725 million with a midpoint of $650. And our adjusted free cash flow guidance is $0 to $120 million with a midpoint of $60 million. I wanted to spend a little bit of a time walking from 18 to 19 and how we got to the number. If you adjust the 750 of 18 results for the pension, you get to kind of a starting number of 729 to walk us to 19. As most of you are aware, or all of you are probably aware, there's a pretty significant drop off in capacity revenues in 2019, and that's roughly $155 million impact. And so if we were standing here today and we hadn't done anything to offset that, we would have been giving you guidance in the $550 million range for 19. Our operational excellence initiative, which a number of my colleagues will come up here later today and talk about, has offset 100% of that capacity revenue decline. It's not all in EBITDA. Roughly 95 of it is in EBITDA, and the other $61 million for the total of 150 shows up in cash flow. A couple points I would make on the operational excellence initiative is I think there's a lot of reference many times to cost cutting and the $300 million that we kind of found over the first couple of years per year cost savings. Those really were true cost savings. Operational excellence, I want to make the point that there's a good piece of that that is performance-based. Margin improvements, operational improvements. So this isn't just all about cost cutting at this point. It's much harder to be successful on the performance aspect of it. But I want to make the point that it's about, you know, a third performance, third O&M, and a third CapEx. I want to spend a little bit of time on the EBITDA trajectory over the next few years. And Alex talked about this briefly, but I think it's really, really important to be able to see talent through this cycle. I read a lot of things about 19 and 20. We're really proud of what we've done in 19 to offset the capacity revenue decline. But I think it's important to be able to have a view and see beyond that, because 21 and 22 are so significant, just given where that capacity revenue cleared for us. And I want to be really careful. We're not giving 2021 guidance today. This is just a simple extrapolation of taking kind of what we know and extrapolating it forward. If you go back to 2015, the portfolio generated $1 billion in adjusted EBITDA, and that's just a like asset. So we've made all the adjustments there for the existing asset portfolio. Moving from 16 to 18 timeframe, EBITDA declined pretty significantly. That was mostly driven by a decline in energy revenues and some hedge performance. Over those few years, you see the $330 million of run rate cost savings that really materially between O&M, SG&A, and CapEx helped to offset and kind of hold that line relatively flat and offset that revenue decline. Capacity revenues were pretty stable during that time period. If you move forward to 2019, we see the big CR650 guidance midpoint there. You see the drop off in capacity revenues and then a further drop off in 2020. When you look out to 2021, the $450 million of capacity revenue is a known and cleared number, okay? So capacity revenues are cleared through May of 22. We know that today. We've extrapolated the back half of 22 just for chart purposes, but we know the 21 number, the 450 is there. So if you take the 450 and what we believe, given all the cost cutting today, given all the operational excellence initiative, what we believe is a run rate sustainable cost structure for talent for our existing portfolio, which we think is in the $800 million range for O&M and G&A combined, and then around $300 million for CapEx. If you extrapolate that forward, you add and plug in the $450 for PJM. I took a very wide range. As you know, there's a lot of volatility around energy. Just take a wide range of energy revenues and plug that in. It's under a very reasonable set of assumptions you can get to an EBITDA in the $800 million-$850 million range. So again, I think it's important as you're kind of thinking about Talen to not focus as much on 19 and 20, but to kind of be able to see Talen through the cycle. It's critical, I think, for analyzing the credit, understanding the future. And if you were to layer this on top, and we'll talk about the balance sheet in a minute, but if you were to layer this on top of the current debt maturity profile, for example, or our next maturity today is 21, which we've de-risked pretty substantially, it's hard to really craft a story where there's serious concern, I think, just given what we know in the future. A few things I point out on the capital structure. There's a lot of numbers on this page. The numbers here are as of December 2018 balances, but they are pro forma for the tender offer we did in January this year. So you may recall we did a $200 million tender offer. We spent $140 million of cash and retired roughly $200 million of debt. So we captured $60 million of discount there. This is pro forma for that. We've got some details on the assets on the left side of the page there, the assets that support our secured debt, and then our Northeast Gas Gen, which is the ex-Mach Gen financing, and then we have our Lower Mount Bethel Martins Creek project financing that we just completed last quarter. One thing I do want to point out on the right hand of the page, kind of halfway down, the current balance on the revolver. We ended the year with roughly $200 million drawn on the revolver, and I want to be like fully transparent with that today and talk about it a little bit. The $342 here is taking the $200 plus the revolver draw that we did for the tender offer that we did in January. Balance sheet efficiency is going to be a huge priority for us this year, and there's a lot of things that fall in that bucket, but it's things like how do we expand our first lien hedging program? How do we think about when we use cash, when we use LCs, when we trade on exchange versus doing first lien? How do we negotiate better credit terms with our counterparties? There's a lot of things that go into this bucket, but this is an area that we will need to really focus on this year. And so I want to point it out not because I think 342 is a good number, but because I want you all to know that we're very focused on it. So when you see this in year-end financials, I just want you to have that voice over there. Other thing I'd point out here is just on the bottom left-hand side of the page, you'll see our leverage metrics. I'm always really amazed at the wide range of leverage calculations I see, whether it's things I read about Talen, different types of reports that are produced. I used to kind of feel the same way when I was at Calpine too. Everyone makes these different adjustments, like different treatment for Talen specifically, different treatment of fuel purchases, how we treat the undrawn portion of the revolver, et cetera. I think it's actually very confusing because there's so many versions of the truth out there. And I want to be really clear with how we calculate leverage and how we look at it internally. The way that we calculate leverage is the way that we are required to calculate it, and it's the way that we've agreed to calculate it in our debt agreements. So in the revolver and the term loan, we have agreed with many of you in this room, we're going to calculate leverage this way. We produce a quarterly compliance certificate, and we track these calculations internally. And so that is how we're going to look at it. We have a lot of these conversations about what is the right adjustments, and we want to be consistent with the math that we've agreed to. So we produce this on a quarterly basis. As of Q4 18, we sit at roughly 1.7 times a senior secured leverage ratio and a total leverage ratio of just under 5 times. And the total leverage ratio is on a recourse basis, just to provide a little clarity there. And I know a lot of you have asked questions about recourse, non-recourse. We are working on some additional disclosure on that that hopefully we can share at a later date. A couple things just to highlight on recent transactions we did. Most of you probably know we did the project financing of Lower Mount Bethel Martins Creek that we closed in November this past year. We raised $450 million there. It was a Term Loan B, and we used the proceeds to tender the near-term maturities in the capital structure. We took down $400 million roughly of the 2021 tower, so reduced that to it's under $150 million now following the last tender offer. And then in January of 19, did the $200 million waterfall tender offer. This was a very different, not so much targeted at the near-term maturities, but targeted towards the biggest discounts in the capital structure, and we were able to capture $60 million of discount there. One thing I do want to point out in our debt maturity profile that I think often gets missed, although for Talen this is kind of a newer, now given the project financing, is that we have over $450 million of deleveraging already built in our capital structure. This is actually one of the things I really like about the project financing, is that it forces a level of deleveraging in the structure. So over the next 6 to 7 years, we've got pretty meaningful deleveraging before any incremental capital allocation decision is made. Here we are in financial policy. We're going to test how fast your reading skills are on this. There's a few things I want to say here. One is Ralph and Alex and I spent a lot of time on the road last year. I have 3 kids at home, and I'm sure one of them has done the exact math on it. I'd have been asked, but we spent a lot of time with all of you. It was probably one of the most important things that we did last year because it gave us a lot of feedback and we've reflected on that. I mean, the whole reason why we're here today is because we've heard you and we want to acknowledge that. And so I want to say thank you for all that feedback. It's also helped us on our discussions with Riverstone, our discussions internally, and kind of led us to where we are today on the financial policy. You heard Ralph and Alex talk today a lot about the Talon story, rehashing the Talon story. There's a lot of things we've accomplished. The story itself, the turnaround, I think is pretty incredible. There's a lot we've accomplished over the last couple of years. We have over 30 of our Talon colleagues here today. Many of you make it to meet in the break and at lunch. And we're really proud of our team. This is an incredible team of people. But here's the thing. It is really hard to crystallize all of the value we've created if we have a weak currency. And that is why the balance sheet is important. And that is why we are very much focused on it. A successful outcome is a successful outcome for us, for Talon. It's a successful outcome for Riverstone that maximizes their equity value. It's a successful outcome for all of you. It's also an outcome where the balance sheet is strong, the cost of capital is low, and investors get paid at par. It's a balanced outcome and there is an outcome that is good for everybody in this room. And that really is the basis from which we built this financial policy, in addition to all the feedback we've gotten from you. Our financial policy will be forward-looking, and it's going to be dynamic, like our business is dynamic. And so the framework is that we will look into the future, and there's a number of things we'll evaluate when we look into the future. We will look at our liquidity position. We will look at our cash flows. We will look at what's going on in the market. We will look at our leverage, and we will look at other capital plans that we have for that year or beyond. We believe a reasonable and sustainable level of leverage for our business is in the fours. And I'm using fours as opposed to a specific number because things ebb and flow and there's just a lot of moving pieces. And I think back to the point about specific leverage calculations, everybody wants a specific number because you can calculate it and then you can kind of put it out there. But I think we need to be a little more flexible with how we think about this from a policy perspective. So what we've done for 19 is we've taken this framework and we've looked into 19. We've said, okay, we're going to evaluate all these things for 19. And the conclusion for 19 is that the best use of our excess capital this year is towards debt repayment. So we're announcing today that we are not going to pay a dividend in 2019. Thank you. And just to be clear, this isn't like we're not being cute. We've not paid a dividend in Q4 of 18 either, because I know someone will ask that question. But look, I want to be clear about the expectations here because this does come with a set of expectations, right? Having this financial policy framework for capital allocation is really important, but we're doing it because we have a very specific set of expectations, and I want to be clear with that this morning. We're doing this because we're hoping this improves our credit profile and perception. It influences our ratings trajectory. It grows our access to capital at an attractive cost of capital, not at 13%. And it allows us to maintain the liquidity we need to run our business through extending the revolving credit facility. And so I want to be just clear with that thesis because that is very central to Talon's success. And everybody here is here today because each of you plays a role in our story and how this unfolds over time and to this thesis playing out. So with that, I just want to say thank you again for being here today. And I will trade it over to my colleague, Brad Berryman.